glorious Wednesday morning. It is time to talk to our guy, Mac Quatrero, Royals manager. And I will have to say this, Dusty is off. He is on vacation. Mac is in. And you have the best seat in the house right now to watch what Bobby Witt's doing. I mean, do you just sit back and just laugh and smile and go, my God, this guy is just awesome to watch. And he's gone.
Let me call him back.
I didn't touch the phone either.
I know, it's happened twice.
I did not touch the phone.
Must be the phones. And let me call him back.
I did not touch that telephone. I am not going to touch that phone. I know I can't work that telephone, so I'm not going to touch that phone. I don't know what I'm trying to say there, but we'll get Mac Quatrero back on here in just one second as we get set to talk to the manager losing last night to the Chicago White Sox game 2 tonight up in Chicago on the south side. And it's time to get a win and figure out what's going to happen with Salvador Perez moving forward, all of that kind of good stuff. But I want to start out and talk about you getting the best seat in the house, my man. I think all of Kansas City and maybe the baseball world is jealous. You're sitting there watching Bobby Witt do these things over the last couple of weeks. I mean, I don't even know what to say and what to ask you, Matt, because it's so remarkable to watch this guy, you know?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, and it's honestly something that, you know, you tell yourself every day, like, you don't take this for granted. Don't take this for granted. 29 other teams would be, are very envious of having a guy like Bobby in our lineup. And when you say a guy like Bobby, it's like, there is only one,
yep.
Right? So, you know, there's plenty of people that I've run into already this year, you know, people with different organizations that watch from different angles and like, man, you get to see this every day. Like, seriously, they do make comments like that. So you understand how special it is, and it's a generational talent and an even better person. So it's a very special spot for us and for the people of Kansas City.
I mean, isn't that cool, though, to have other people in the game come up to you who are like these crusty veterans that have seen it all and be like, man, this guy's good. It shows you how good he is.
No question. Yeah. And again, I mean, we get to see it, too. So
yeah.
The proof is there and right in front of your face. And, you know, and I think what's really exciting is he's pushing himself to get better and better. So I don't know that we've even seen the height of his abilities.
Is there something specific about his game that gets your jaw dropped? Because some people, it's the glove, the diving catches, it's the speed, natural ability at the plate. Is there something that you regularly go, damn?
Yeah, I mean, well, he makes the defensive plays look easier than they are. I mean, that's
Hell yeah.
The appreciation for what he's doing. You know, like everybody sees that he dives and makes that play. But, you know, when everything's happening so quickly on the field, you don't realize how many times that ball would get by someone else, or those pop-ups that he runs back to catch in the outfield, or the arm strength once you make the diving catch to get up and make an accurate throw. Like that one last night was a perfect example on Grichuk. Like,
yep.
He made the dive look pretty routine, but then the calmness and the ability to get up and make a strong, accurate throw, it's just not that easy. And we do get to see that on the offensive side. You know, there's very few people that hit the ball like he does as far as low and hard, you know, driving the ball to all fields. You know, and a lot of times when people, even in the dugout, when they see him hit a ball like that, they'll yell, two iron, you know, like that's what it looks like when somebody hits a low line drive with a two iron with a, you know, playing golf. So you just don't see guys do it the way he does.
Is he the greatest player you've coached?
Yes, yes. Yeah, I mean, the physical component to it, I mean, the speed, the power, the defense, everything we're talking about is, you know, you just don't see people like him around very often.
That's why I'm like, I don't even know what to say anymore. It's like when he made that play yesterday, that diving stop, I'm not kidding. I'm sitting there, I'm going, that's an easy one for Bobby. Like, that's where I am at this point in time. It's like, it's in that Patrick Mahomes mentality where he does something and you're like, whoa, but you're not surprised because that's who they are, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Like, you almost come to expect it, but at the same time, you don't take it for granted. So it is a very unique spot.
How's Salvi doing? Is he healthy? Yeah. Is he you know, ready to go? Like, because it went 11 days without being behind the plate. What's the update on him?
Yeah, that last night was really encouraging. You know, we did that intentionally, obviously, to give him a little breather from the physical aspect of catching on his hips and everything, and we did the best we could. And I think last night coming out of that game, he felt good. Now look, he's not going to be 100%, you know, from hips that have been bothering him and you know, the years and years of pounding and catching, it's physically taxing, but you know, he manages a lot of things physically, as a lot of these guys do, to play every day. And he's willed himself to that, and he'll continue to do that. But that last night was really encouraging from a standpoint of how he felt after the game and also, you know, what he was able to do at the plate.
Yeah, it was big, I thought, to see him get that home run early on. Kind of a, I don't want to use the term sigh of relief. It's a regular season game. It wasn't a playoff type of moment, but I could feel kind of that sigh of relief for myself anyway to watch Salvi do that, because there's nothing worse, Matt, than watching a guy get old before your eyes, especially a hero like Salvador Perez. And so you never want to admit that Father Time may be knocking on that door, you know? And so he hit that home run last night. I'm like, yeah, there you go, Salvi.
I mean, we're going to see offense from him. You know, he's been through a rough go of it. You know, the physical component, I think, has something to do with it. But overall, we know, I mean, we're not, you know, it was last September, he's hitting his 30th homer and driving in 100 runs. I mean, he can still hit, and he's going to be a big part of this offense as we get going.
Is there any pressure from him, maybe, that you've noticed, trying to catch George with those 8 home runs and be that team leader?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, he needs to play. You know, he knows he's not going to get them all in a week or 2 weeks. You know, I mean, we don't talk about that at all. I mean, he's been so good at that kind of stuff, at compartmentalizing and not worrying about records and milestones and those kinds of things, because really, truthfully, all he really wants to do is win.
Yeah.
And when he focuses on that and he throws it, once the game starts and he's competing, because he's an ultimate competitor, that's all he cares about, is what he can do right now to help us win.
Now, in Salvi's absence behind the dish, we've gotten to see more Carter Jensen and a couple of hiccups here and there, whether it's a missed tag or missed throw out, but we've also seen some really good moments. How important are those kind of hiccups and growing moments to a young player like Jensen?
Yeah, exceptionally important. You know, and I think, you know, what those things stand out, but what also stands out to us is, I mean, he's received the ball very well. His relationships with the pitchers have grown really, really strong. The work he's done, you know, at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, working on not only his game, but also game calling, understanding what each pitcher wants, because that's the big challenge in the big leagues as a young catcher, is you have 13 pitchers. And, you know, in our case, you know, the starters, most of them are veterans, and they have a certain way that they want things. And That is not just a plug and play, like, oh, I got this figured out. That takes work and it takes time. And his day is very structured to understand, you know, whether he has to go catch bullpens or go to the meetings or do his own prep work through video for the other team. Like, there are a lot of demands on him. And I think he's learning that. And the only way to learn it is through the experience of doing it.
I think also, too, in the way you're talking, has got me thinking a little bit like the offensive coordinator-quarterback relationship in the NFL. Like, they need to know what each other's doing. They need to be in sync. I feel like the catcher now has, like, 5 different offensive coordinators, and everybody wants something different. I never really thought about how difficult a job that can be, especially for a young guy dealing with 5 completely different personalities on the mound. And, by the way, there's 13 guys in the bullpen that are going to want something different, too, you know?
No question. And I think, you know, we're set up to be able to help him with that. I mean, we have very good coaches that, you know, break down different areas of the game, whether it's the physical components of catching or the mental aspect of understanding what our pitcher's strengths are or what the opposing hitter's weaknesses are, you know, and then trying to figure out on each day what's the most important thing for him to concentrate on. And we try to vary that based on his physical and, you know, the toll that has been on him. You know, last week he caught several days, you know, then he didn't catch Sunday. Monday was an off day. He didn't catch yesterday. So, you know, you pick your spots so you're not overwhelming him. But at the same time, he's got to go through these steps to for the growth that we know he can handle.
All right, Matt, before we let you get out of here, what's the latest on Cole Reagans?
Cole played catch Sunday. He had Monday off from that, played catch yesterday. It was improved. So at some point this morning, you know, he's back in Kansas City. So at some point this morning, he'll throw again. And we're just hopeful that each day gets better. And then, you know, hopefully we don't have a real timeline up, but we can get back up on the mound, you know, because we do think the symptoms will resolve.
Awesome. Well, go get one today up in Chicago. Take care of business there, and then go crush the Cardinals for a couple of games, all right?
All right, guys. Thank you.
Thanks, Q.
Take care. Matt Quatrero with us here on 96.5 The Fan. Two more in Chicago, then three in St. Louis before the boys in blue return home. Coming up here on 96.5 The Fan, I saw something on the internet that looked like the Zapruder film, but it is the greatest example of a pro coach leading his players. We'll tell you what that is next. Couple of news and notes to pass along of things that are going on in sports that aren't necessarily a huge topic at this time, but most likely will be here in the future. I don't know if you saw this yesterday, but The Athletic is now reporting that the Players Association and the owners had their first meeting. Kind of a groundwork, lay out the here's what we're looking for, here what you're looking for. Okay, F you. We'll see you later,
exactly,
right?
Yeah.
Hey, that's good news. They're talking, though. I mean, that is good. Great news, the fact that they are talking, because baseball is in such a golden spot right now. You'd hate to miss a year of Bobby Witt, you know, with his playability, watching him go out there every single day because these guys can't figure it out. So the good news is they've had their first meetings, or they're having their first meetings today or tomorrow. They're going to get to, you know, hopefully move this thing forward, and maybe we can get to some labor peace. There doesn't have to be a lockout. There doesn't have to be a work stoppage at all in all of this. Like, if we're all adults and we can just sit around and realize that this golden goose that we currently have right now is awesome, and we can't, you know, risk getting rid of that golden goose, I'm going to tell you something, man. That's what gets deals done. People realizing what they have and how good it is. And for Major League Baseball right now, it's in an amazing spot from where it's ever been. Also, another kind of news and note to pass along, they're going to start to see more and more conversation about the NFL and switching the fields to grass fields over turf fields. The NFLPA right now is upset that every NFL stadium has gotten great green grass put in because of FIFA being here for the World Cup. And so maybe that will ultimately change the thinking of these NFL teams, and maybe we will see a return to grass fields everywhere to try to keep the health and safety of the players up to the level that it needs to be. Everybody knows that, you know, these AstroTurf fields aren't good for you. They cause a lot of wear and tear and injury. I'm dealing it right now with my daughter in high school soccer. I mean, her calves are so tight because of playing on this AstroTurf. And so you're looking at NFL players, you're looking at baseball players, you're looking at the best athletes in the world. Why are we not allowing them to go out there and play on the best surfaces out there? So that's going to be one of those things that I think also gets a lot of conversation when you move forward and start to hear complaining about the NFLPA and complaining from, I should say, the NFLPA. All right. So leadership is a big thing for me. I've been able and been around a lot of good leaders in my career on the sports side of things. Okay. I've seen the way Bill Self leads his program. I've been around Dick Vermeil and the way he led his program. I've seen the way Andy Reid leads his program. I've had the opportunity to be around a great leader who I think is one of the greatest leaders in sports of all time, and that's Dayton Moore. I get to watch him and the way that he leads, and he'll join us tomorrow at 8 o'clock here on the show. It's about leading people and making people the product, and buying in and pouring into people is something that Dayton always used to talk about when it came to leadership. And sometimes I think in sports, leadership is a lost art. It's not easy to be a leader. Sometimes you have to make decisions that aren't popular. Sometimes you have to do things maybe you don't like, but it's the right thing to do for the betterment of the group. It's not something that is for the faint of heart. And the best leaders get usually the best results out there on the field. And there's a Zapruder film going around of the Spurs landing back in San Antonio. And there's a man that meets the plane on the tarmac in his car.
Mm.
And this is the day when Wemby threw the elbow, which you keep watching that. Thank God they didn't suspend him, but that's the regular season. He's suspended, right?
That was on purpose, yeah.
I mean, did you see his teammate in the background with the... Like that
Dylan would, Harper was like, whoa.
Right. So the NBA rightfully not suspending him. Okay. I'm not in agreement of suspending him in the playoffs. I think that would have been a bad look for the league. This is where the money gets in over the, you know, the sports side of things. The league would have suffered without Wemby being able to play. And then we saw what he did last night. He redeemed himself last night. Right. And so ultimately what I see as this car pulls up to this plane and Wemby gets out, Greg Popovich emerges from this car.
Yeah.
Greg's not the coach anymore,
nope.
But he's the Don of the San Antonio Spurs.
Yes.
He's there at practices. He's on the bench. Mm-hmm. He is the de facto leader. he's a military guy as well. And so he obviously has good traits from leadership, from being in the military. Wemby got off that plane, Pop got out of that car, and he confronted Wemby on the tarmac about what he did in that game with that elbow. And that is leadership.
Yep.
That is, I don't know what was said. I don't know what Pop did, but I guarantee you Wemby was scolded. I guarantee you Pop went out there and said, dude, you are an unbelievable talent. You did something like that. It's going to take away everything that you've accomplished over these last 2 years. It is going to wipe out everything that you've done. That elbow was wrong. That elbow was clearly intentional. And now you're going to have to suffer the consequences. And look, thank God the league didn't suspend him. You don't want to not see Wemby play.
That would have been
and
terrible.
Then he went out there last night and had the best offensive performance since the three-point line was put in.
Yeah, you've said that. I don't know what you mean by that. I have to look that up.
It was in the ESPN article this morning.
Well, it couldn't have been him. He's 2 for 5, so it wasn't
him. Not shooting the three-point shot. Oh, his offensive numbers.
Okay. Yes. Okay, gotcha.
His offensive numbers.
That makes more sense.
Here it is.
Yes.
The Frenchman, as they say, according to ESPN, delivered as the Spurs seized the 3-2 lead. Wemby became the first player in NBA postseason history to tally 27 points, 17 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 blocks, and 2 three-pointers.
Wow.
Since the 1979-80 season when the three-point line was introduced.
Damn.
So he did something,
yes.
Not three-point shots, and I probably phrased that wrong.
I get what you mean now. Yes.
Since the three-point line has been put in, kind of like the merger in the NFL, I guess, maybe basketball they talk about. Since the three-point line, you know, since we lowered the mound in baseball, since we, you know, did this, and since we had the shot clock in basketball, whatever it is, right? There's always something that you go back to and lean on. So since the three-point line was introduced in the 79-80 season, nobody has had this type of offensive performance. And so when Popovich goes out there and meets it, again, this is not an NBA topic. This is a leadership topic.
Yeah.
This is why Greg Popovich is one of the greatest head coaches in all of sports of all time, because he knew what to do in that moment. He knew that was a bad look for his young player. He knows he's not the coach, but he is the don of the franchise. And if you pull up, I mean, that was as mafia as it gets from the movies
so
back
mafia.
In the day.
He gets out of the car. Wemby's already standing there, and it's just like, come here.
Yeah.
Let's go. Let's talk about this.
Yeah.
You need to know the magnitude of what you just did, because not only did they win the game, they beat you mentally.
Right.
And that's something that Wemby's always been so good at for a 21, 22-year-old, and he lost the mental battle that night. They got the best of him, and I think he let him know, hey, man, this is a long series. This is not over, and they're going to rag you and try and drag your ass down. You've got to be able, okay, to stand up to it. He didn't stand up to it that night. He's done it now twice. He showed up there, as you mentioned, after that game. Then they win last night. And then he showed up after game one against Minnesota when they lost. He showed up and he ran the whole film session.
Yeah.
And they kicked their ass game two.
Yeah.
So it's like he just kind of pops out of nowhere. It's like, all right, let me shed some wisdom real quick, and then kind of go back into my corner.
Right.
Let me come out again. All right, you need me again? Okay.
But that's what it is.
It's amazing.
Hey, I'm out of the way. I don't care. But if you need me, give me a call, and I'll be there.
Yes, and I love that Mitch Johnson is that. That shows Mitch Johnson being a good leader, too, knowing that he's okay with that. You didn't have to be. If you were the coach of the Spurs, it's Greg Popovich. But you know the way this works. Hey, it's my team now. I'm here. I get out of the way. And he's letting Popovich run the film session.
You know why? Because he's smart.
He's smart.
And you know what this reminds me of? This is Spoelstra and Pat Riley all over again.
Ooh, yeah, that's a great comp.
Thank you.
Okay, yeah, I like it. That's scary.
And find me another combination where you had a direct successor and that guy stayed on and the team still had success. It doesn't happen a lot. Usually, like, when Andy Reid goes, Andy Reid will go away. He will not be hanging around the organization.
Yeah.
Right? Things happen. People move on. You don't want guys usually hanging around the organization. Well, Greg Popovich wasn't ready to go. He wasn't ready to retire. Didn't need to retire. Health told him he had to retire. So you're this Mitch Johnson guy who nobody knows from Adam, right?
Never heard of the guy.
Nope.
Nobody ever heard of Eric Spoelstra either. Remember when they hired Spo?
They were like, what?
Nobody knew who that
LeBron
guy was.
LeBron wanted him fired.
Nobody knew who that guy was. He's one of the best basketball coaches of all time.
Yep.
He's transcended generations now, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at that relationship now with Pop and with Mitch Johnson. Is that who it is?
Not
Mick Johnson. Mitch Johnson. But that's how I look at that.
Wieners.
As opposed to, you know, another one where a young coach comes in. That's a brilliant move by a young coach. And that's just not a coaching lesson. That's a life lesson, too. You can learn from the olds.
Yeah.
You don't have all the answers when you take over that job. And you took over for Greg Popovich.
For Greg freaking Popovich.
You didn't take over for who? That guy who coached one game with Cleveland and went back to Europe to coach Blatt? David Blatt?
Oh, David Blatt. Right? Yeah.
Like, you didn't take over for that guy.
No, no.
You took over for Pop, and you've allowed Pop to stay involved. You've leaned on Pop. You've used him when you needed to use him. And if the Spurs go on and make the finals, I'm not talking about the Western Conference finals. I'm talking about the NBA finals. And they beat Oklahoma City. We're going back to that moment where Popovich meets Wemby on the tarmac.
Yeah.
And you're the bigger NBA fan than I am, obviously. How come we are not talking more about this nationally? Because that, to me, is one of the greatest leadership moments
that I have
ever seen out of a coach.
I think we're going to hear about it more today because of the performance last night. And so now that video come out, performance happened, and I'll go, oh, so we'll connect the dots. Coming out really going viral this morning. I think it'll become a story. I hope it will, because you're right, it should, because this is just adding on to Greg Popovich's legend. And I assume he's officially with I know he would get a ring, but I hope it would be official.
He's the president.
He's on the books there. Yeah. Like, he's still employed. Okay, yeah, good. Yeah, because even if he weren't, and that's just like the reason I have to ask is because he would still be there, even if he wasn't officially a part of the team. Like, he's going to be there forever because that organization is so great too. Mitch Johnson, that you said, I don't know anything about him. I'm like, yeah, I don't know much about him either. He was with the Austin Spurs from 2016 to 2019, worked his way up as an assistant there to an assistant with the San Antonio Spurs in 2019.
It's Spoelstra and Riley.
I'm pouring into you, and now you're ready, and I'm going to go.
Yeah.
But I'm still going to be here. Awesome.
Yeah.
That's how great organizations do it.
It is. It really is. That's what you want to do. You want to groom that next guy and make sure that he's ready to take over when you're a legend, right? That's what I'm doing with you. No, I can't.
I'm okay with that.
But what I'm saying is, like, when you're a guy like Popovich and you know you've had this run of success, it's eventually going to come to an end. You're a team like the Spurs. You want to continue this run of success. How can we do this seamlessly and make this thing work? And being able to have him around is such a godsend for that head coach.
Awesome.
I mean, that moment where he met Wemby on the tarmac, I'm looking at it and I'm going, I want to work for him.
Yeah.
I covered Popovich for 2 years, and I regret every day of it because I didn't spend enough time. I was young. I was 22, 23 years old.
I didn't understand.
And it was also early in that Spurs run. It was their first year that they were good. And I was around Tim Duncan, David Robinson, Avery Johnson, and Greg Popovich. Maybe the four best that I've ever been around in anything, right? Popovich, Hall of Famer, and Avery Johnson was a stud when he played. Great leader.
Yeah, he was awesome.
But I didn't appreciate it enough. I didn't sit there and listen enough. I was doing other things. I was 22 years old. Who's this guy?
The Spurs aren't, whatever.
And so, like, if you talk about, like, career regrets, it's like, damn, I wish I would have known at that time who I was around all the time.
How special what you were seeing was.
Yeah, how I was watching this because, you know, again, it was a minor market basketball. Who knew that they were going to have this dynasty and
Tim
all
Duncan
this kind
who?
Of stuff?
Yeah.
And it was unbelievable, man. Like, unbelievable.
That's so cool.
That to look back and go, damn, I wish I would have appreciated that moment more where I got the opportunity to see him. Go ahead.
No, well, I was just going to say, to bring it back to Kansas City, and I know, again, we talked about it, we've had these examples. I assume in baseball, there's probably a couple of these examples. I'd imagine we've named two in basketball. We could maybe come up with a third, but we've got two with Spoelstra and Riley, and now we're seeing in Wemby and possibly Mitch Johnson being the future coach there for a long time to come, only 39 years old. Can that happen with the Chiefs? Who's our guy under Andy Reid? We know Matt Nagy's gone.
Yeah, Matt's gone.
It's not Bienemy. We love Bienemy, and he's here for a reason. He's going to bring the accountability. Very important to this year.
But he's not the head coach.
He's not a head coach.
Not a head coach.
He's not a head coach.
Interviewed 19 times with one team twice.
And I've died on this hill. There could be reasons for it. I've gotten in many arguments about it. It is what it is. He's not a head coach.
Right.
And I was wrong on that. He's not. So who is that something that can be done?
It was getting done. It should have been turned over about 5 years ago. And then Brett found this guy in Texas, and Andy's like, I ain't going anywhere.
Yeah, heck no. I'm glad he didn't.
You know, Andy got, hell no, I'm not going anywhere. And so, you know, Matt goes to Chicago, wins a couple of playoffs, you know, gets in the playoffs a couple of times, and Mitch Trubisky comes back here, now he's running the Giants. And so, you know, I don't know, Mac, who that guy is. We had that guy.
Is that possible, though, too, in football?
Has it ever happened in the NFL?
That's what I'm asking. I don't know.
Let's talk out loud real okay. fast. Has it ever happened, really, in the NFL where you've had that seamless transition? I don't think it has.
What was the... Bill Cowherd to Mike Tomlin.
Mike Tomlin
was that. I know it was seamless, but what was
he wasn't an assistant. Yeah, with Cowherd.
He wasn't under.
Yeah, he was in Minnesota the year before. It wasn't like they were grooming him and had they just nailed it. Like they just nailed it. And that isn't easy to do either. You know, that's not easy to do at all, is to, you know, nail three straight head coaches in a row like that. I mean, that's just crazy. And who knows what they're going to do with Mike McCarthy up there in Pittsburgh. They may find a way to get back to a Super Bowl. Who knows if they do? It'd be remarkable to see something like that happen.
Yeah.
But I can't think of a real kind of changing of the guard where we're grooming this guy. It seemingly happens in college where they'll name a successor or a coach in waiting, and that cat usually never
doesn't work.
Never gets that job. Ever gets that job.
And if he does, it doesn't come to fruition. It doesn't equal wins. We're seeing that be a little different, I guess, over in Duke with Shire. I think his name is John Shire.
John Shire.
That's gone well so far.
That's gone well. Yeah, that's kind of a seamless transition there where they did that. Maybe we'll see it at KU eventually from Bill to Jacque Vaughn.
That would be awesome.
That's my dream.
Sick.
I would love that. I think that would be outstanding. I'm not rushing Bill out the door at any point in time.
No, take your time.
But if you want to do that transition and have him, because people thought for years that may have been Danny Manning, right? And then Danny went and coached elsewhere and wasn't that great. And so, you move on and you find somebody else that you could potentially, you know, turn it over to. But yeah, I don't think in the NFL it's happened, because you look at some of the best coaches in the NFL of all time. The Dolphins haven't been the same since Don Shula left. They really haven't. The Patriots...
I thought it was going somewhere. I don't know.
But that wasn't a seamless transition from Belichick to Vrabel. You had Gerard Mayo in there for a year.
Yeah, and that was, to your point, that was the successor. That was the guy in waiting. They hired him as an assistant, and they were like, hey, you're going to be our head coach.
Right.
You played here, you're going to learn under Bill, and then you're going to be the next guy. And it was bad. Now, they only gave him 1 year, but... By all accounts,
Vrabel became available. Rossini told him that he was going to become available up there in New England.
Probably.
She called Kraft and is like, hey, I'm hearing that Mike Vrabel may become available at the end of the season. Are you interested in him?
Mike's in the back. Yeah, Diana, also tell him this. Tell him.
Ooh, tell him I like his hair.
Yeah, exactly.
And I like those shirts that he wears with the white collars that are so outdated, but tell him I like those. And tell him I thought it was cool that he went to Miami the night before the Chiefs game.
Exactly. Ugh. God.
Yeah. Get bent.
Gross.
Yeah. So,
gross.
So long story short, I don't know that there's ever been that seamless transition in the NFL where you just went from Coach A to Coach B, that Coach B was a direct descendant of Coach A. They tried it in San Francisco a little bit with George Seifert taking over for Bill Walsh out there in those years, and he ended up winning a Super Bowl. He only lasted a couple of years and was ultimately fired and then went to Carolina for a year or two and then, you know, out of it. But you really don't. It doesn't happen. It's hard to do. I mean, we're trying to find an example in the NFL, but there's only the two basketball examples that I can
think
of.
Yeah, it really doesn't happen in general. Yeah, you mentioned college basketball is more of an often thing, but again, that doesn't actually work. So yeah, it's going to be a whole new shebang when Andy Reid's gone. It's not going to be, oh, this guy, and then here's these assistants that we recognize.
It still could be Matt Nagy taking over. Who knows at this point in time? If the Giants go out there and they dominate on offense and Jackson Dart is the next Patrick Mahomes conversations type stuff, Matt will be back. But I don't know who, and I don't know when that is either. Or maybe Harbaugh retires before Reid and Matt gets that job at the Giants. And he doesn't want to come back to Kansas City. Who knows? But I don't know what the line of replacement is, and I don't want to worry about that.
No,
because
I don't
we're
either.
In a good spot right
yes,
now.
Yes, let's make sure we stay in that good spot. This is a big year, but I agree. Good spot.
LeBron, you know, is close to retiring. We don't know. But his tenure in L.A., they won the bubble championship, and that was it. Missed the playoffs a couple of times. Kind of a failure out there in Los Angeles. You're kind of worried about if that happens to Patrick Mahomes?
Yeah, I guess, like, it's crazy to say, like, he won a ring in L.A., and we're asking if his tenure there was a success. People, we have a texter saying three championships and a bubble title in 25 years. That's a fail. Four championships, widely regarded as the second best ever, one of the best athletes of all time. And it's a fail. And now that makes me think, damn, well, we're holding up Mahomes to that Tom Brady meter and just say, you got to keep up, you got to keep up. Well, what happens if in 4 or 5 years he's 36 years old, he hasn't even been to another Super Bowl? Are we calling his whole career a failure?
No. I don't think we're calling LeBron's career a failure. I think we're calling the LA experiment a failure. And that's completely different, right?
Totally.
His career, as we talked about earlier, his life, he's played in the NBA 23 years.
That's awesome.
Only 18 years of his life has he not played in the NBA.
Badass. Okay?
It's insane. It's awesome. I love it. I think that's like the coolest stat I've heard in a long time. Right?
It's awesome.
Oh, that's cool. But his career has been unbelievable. He's the second best player next to Michael Jordan. His career will be looked at as a failure because he never won 6 championships like Michael Jordan. He's not a failure. We are. The way that we view LeBron
sports
James.
And sports,
right?
Yes.
We view LeBron James as a failure. He's not a failure at all. He's unbelievable what he did. But we look at it because we're comparing him to the greatest of all time. We're comparing him to Michael Jordan. So is his career a failure? Hell no. Was the LA experiment a failure? Yeah, I think it probably was. I think ultimately it was. I mean, you foisted your son on the team.
Yeah, that wasn't a great look. And even though some of that's been erroneously reported, in my opinion, like Bronny is an NBA player at some level, but the whole way it happened, it was not a good look, and he probably should have known that. He didn't really give a rip. He wanted to play with his son, and I kind of liked the flex. He got to do it. It was really cool.
I don't hate it either.
Like, he threw his son a lob in a playoff game, or his son threw him a lob in a playoff game. 20-year-old son threw his 41-year-old dad a lob in a playoff. It's pretty
awesome.
It's awesome. So
it is
cool flex. But I think if you told 2019 LeBron James, hey man, you're going to win a bubble ring, we'll tell you what that means in 7 years. Other than that, it's going to be widely regarded as fake and not really respected. And the rest of it, you're going to be first round exits, you're going to be swept, and you're going to miss the playoffs. What do you think? He'd be like, what?
Yeah.
You're going to have Luka Doncic for one of those years.
Right.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, that 2 years, two of those playoffs.
Two
of those playoffs, and I know he was hurt this year, so fine. But still, you'd go, wait, what? That's what happened? Yeah, I think it sucks to say because I hate minimizing, even though it was a bubble title. But yeah, that's a fail.
Well, it's minimized, and the reason the other titles aren't minimized that year is because the NBA stopped down for 2 months. Everybody rested.
Totally, it's not that is not talked about. That's a good point.
You know, everybody was rested. And so they went and played this bubble game.
Yeah,
and
fresh.
It was all fresh. And so it wasn't like these guys had the grueling regular season.
It's different.
They stopped it on March 15th or whatever it was and didn't pick it back up until like July.
And the fans make such a big difference.
Huge difference.
Oh God, it's so fun in playoff games when someone hits a shot or you can feel the crowd getting into it when their team's down and all of a sudden they've scored 6 straight points. And you know what that feels like in an arena. It's like,
oh, hell yeah.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah.
And that one there. That one not there.
No, not there at all. And so you're hoping Patrick doesn't get to that level,
nope.
I guess. You know?
Nope.
And I don't think he will. I don't think ultimately we'll look at Patrick Mahomes if he doesn't make the Super Bowl in the next 10 years and say his career is failure. We could look at the last 10 years and go, man, we didn't achieve what we wanted to. But overall, I mean, the guy's the Hall of Famer. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer regardless of what he does moving forward,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would. It would be tough to, even if he doesn't win, it would be tough to not put him on the Mount Rushmore when it's all said and done, now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Coming up here on 96.5 The Fan, they're going to do a lot of traveling, man. A lot of traveling. We'll tell you who and when next.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan. Fesco and Dusty is brought to you by Golden Oak Lending. Do you need extra cash? Golden Oak Lending can convert your home's equity into cash in as little as 14 days. Let Golden Oak Lending cure your blues.
All right. Back at it here. 96.5 The Fan. Fesco and Dusty with you. Dusty off, Mac in. Coming up tomorrow, Dayton Moore will join us around 8 o'clock, I believe, is what time we're going to talk to the former general manager.
Sweet.
We are a week away from his charity golf tournament out at Topgolf. See You in the Major Leagues Foundation. Going to be a lot of fun. Dusty and I are going to go around and talk to everybody. We got some cool things that we're going to be doing at the See You in the Major Leagues golf tournament. If you want to sign up, go to seeyouinthemajorleagues.com. I think we have a bay or two left. You can get out there and rent one for the Topgolf event next Thursday night to benefit the See You in the Major Leagues Foundation and the unbelievable work that they do. I mean, my wife is a mentor for Dayton's Foundation, and I get to see it firsthand every single week about how they change the lives of kids in Kansas City, and they come alongside these kids and do just amazing things. And so all that money that we're going to raise stays right here in Kansas City. It helps these kids get the mentorship that they need, and it's really an unbelievable program to see how they put this whole thing together, and they basically, you know, get kids when they're a freshman in high school, get them all the way through their high school years, form these relationships with these kids, and give them an opportunity in life that I never had and I'm so jealous of. I mean, it is just a remarkable program. See you in the major leagues, or maybe nothing better than that here in Kansas City for what they do for kids. We brought them under the BMA umbrella as well, so they're going to be participating in Dancing with the Stars this year in a couple of weeks. If you want to get a table for that, bmafoundation.org. Get your table now for that event coming up on June 5th. And so there's just so much going on that's good in Kansas City, and Dayton's always at the forefront of doing great things in Kansas City. So we'll talk to him tomorrow on the show. The Chiefs are not top on this list, which I'm glad. I'm glad we're in the middle of the pack.
Very
I'm glad we're average for the first time in,
yeah.
in a long time, Mac. I'm glad that the Chiefs are average.
And you're talking about air miles each team's going to have to travel this season. Schefter just came out with it. As we learn more about the schedule, we know our international complete slate. We can go through that later, maybe this segment. But the 49ers, dude, 38,000 miles traveled for reference. Number two is the Rams, 34. Number three is 28. So between number one and number three, there is 10,000 miles of difference between the 49ers and the Houston Texans as far as miles traveled.
Just to put that into perspective for those who are rolling their eyes and saying these are pro athletes, it's basically 1,000 miles air from here to New York, a little bit like 1,100 miles.
There you go.
Do that 10 times.
10 more times.
10 more times.
It's a great way to think about it. Put it in perspective.
Seriously.
There.
Now,
yes.
I know you're not dealing with the security and all that, and they're very lucky. They don't have, but still, you're still on a plane. You're still cramped. It's no better a plane than what we fly on. Everybody's back there in coach doing their thing. You know, maybe the linemen get the extra leg room rows or something like that.
So let's stick with that metric then. 1,000 miles New York, right? So
yeah.
I said 10,000 for Texans, 49ers. That's the gap between 1 and 3.
Yeah.
How about that? Texans at 3, 28,000. The Chiefs all the way down at 17 at 18,000. So another 10,000-mile gap between where the Chiefs are at 17 and number 3, the Texans, to put that in perspective, 20,000 less miles than the San Francisco 49ers have to travel.
And that's that Rio game, right? Isn't San Francisco, are they playing in the Rio game this year?
No, they're playing
in Australia. That's what it is.
Yeah, that's why number 1 and number 2 are
so
the Rams and Niners.
Right, and so you look at the other ones, and you probably, you know, you can subtract the Australia one, but even still, they're still traveling a very far distance. The Texans are still traveling a very far distance. It's really good, I think, that the Chiefs are kind of, you know, in the middle of the pack on this one, because we were the ones, and I think it was you that kind of put it into perspective to me about why they deserve the home game. And you know, I wanted it to be in Denver because I want to win on the road on the opening week. I think that would be just special and spectacular. I understand why it's home. It's Arrowhead. It's Kansas City. It's Patrick Mahomes. It's Andy Reid. It's the best environment in football. Let's go. But also, it's also good to keep these miles down for these guys who have had to be the guinea pig over these last 5 years and basically take one in the shorts for every single one-off that the NFL was trying to sell to a network or to a streamer. They made the Kansas City Chiefs participate in that. And so I think we're seeing the schedule maybe fall a little bit back in our favor. And I'm sure when it comes out tomorrow, we'll all look at it and go, damn, we got Christmas, we got Thanksgiving, we're going to have Valentine's Day and President's Day because we're going to the Super Bowl. So we're going to have all of that wrapped up and ready to go. So we're going to be playing on every damn holiday.
Every holiday. Yeah, I think they've got, I've got it bookmarked here. Let me just check here for you. I believe I do anyways. Here we go. NFL has Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday games during Christmas week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Sunday games during Thanksgiving week.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously they've got 3, 5, 7, 9 international games, some of which fall on weird times. Anthony DeBundo says, many will complain about this. Everyone will watch the games.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a breaking point, and the NFL is closer to that than it realizes.
It is. No, it absolutely is now. I am convinced now. Maybe a year ago I didn't think so, or 2 years ago. But as we continue to move forward and continue to see people now fighting with Congress about the television stuff with the NFL, right?
Like the
government is now getting involved. Florio's calling out the NFL for their 87% number. He goes, it's really not that. It's only 30% because you only really get one game. They're counting, you know.
That's a good point.
They're saying, well, you get four games on CBS. Yeah, but I only get one in my market.
Exactly. So you can't say, yeah, very good point.
Yeah.
So true. They skew that crap.
They do. They do. And is it wrong? No. Is it right? No. It's like statistics, right? You can find a stat and work it to however you want it to fit your narrative. And so that's what they're doing. So I think the NFL right now is under as much. And look, the networks aren't coming to the table to renegotiate with the league right now. The NFL wants to renegotiate, get more money. The network's like, we're not ready to go there quite yet. So they may have pushed it a little bit too far where people are like, all right, I'm tapped. But you know what? Then, Mac, the ratings come out and you never see you never see the results that you expect from the complaining that you hear. And that's why I always say the complaining is the vocal minority. The people who complain are the small minority of people who take the time to complain, because it's when it's something you like, you don't complain about it. But when it's something you don't like, you do. You complain
about
it.
You make it everything, your personality almost.
Yeah, you do. And then it becomes a big deal, and it just fuels itself. And so until the people stop watching, the NFL is going to continue to do what they're doing. And judging by the numbers, nobody stopped watching this league, right?
Nope.
Cody and Gold are coming up. Alex is back from surgery.
There he is.
Yeah. And
he can smell.
He can smell again. He'll tell you what Cody smells like next.